An air-conditioned bus takes me and my beat-up backpack from JFK Airport to downtown Manhattan. I am 22 and flat broke. In the airport, I had no change for a card or to call my friend and had to use my overdrawn Visa to purchase a ticket for the shuttle bus. I'm also in love with two men, neither of whom is here with me now. It is a sweltering July day, so hot that the view outside my window seems to shimmer. These oppressive Tel Aviv-like temperatures are a surprise. Having never been to the U.S., I had expected a cool, polite North American summer. That heat, paired with jet lag, culture shock, and travel-induced exhaustion, a 17-hour flight from New Delhi via London, makes everything appear a bit surreal, as through a film of fog. The American highways are sleek, fast, and so new, unlike back home where history is everywhere, written on buildings and soaked into the earth, unlike India where the roads are narrow and potholed and jumbled with vehicles. When the Manhattan skyline appears in the distance, a row of solemn gray buildings like soldiers snap to attention, I straighten in my seat and search my heart hard for emotion. This is it, I tell myself. Don't miss it. Hurry. Feel something. But the bus rumbles on through underpasses and over bridges, and the skyline grows and diffuses into individual buildings and streets and traffic. The moment is gone. The only thing I feel is heartache, and it's been with me for months now, like an exotic, undetected bug, a stowaway riding along with me from Israel through India and all the way here. At 15, I drew the Manhattan skyline across my bedroom wall with teenage fervor and hopefulness. I painted the buildings white and the sky in swirling grays and blacks. I used a dinner plate to shape a milky full moon. On the top right corner of my mural, a small window opened to a square of Israeli skies, sultry and thick, misplaced. At night, I would fall asleep gazing at the stars on my walls and imagine that I lived there. New York. Because of Madonna and Paul Auster and Catcher in the Rye. Because if I'd learned anything from the subtitled Hollywood movies I had watched at Shalom Cinema on Herzl Street, with its ever-creaking wooden seats, its floor littered with peanut skins and sunflower seed shells, it was that New York was where people went to start over, reinvent themselves. And that the American dream was for everyone, even for a little girl from a Yemeni neighborhood in a tiny, messed-up Middle Eastern country. It was a dream I could adapt, steal, make my own. Outside Grand Central Station, I sit on my backpack and wait for Shira. I haven't seen her since the last time she came to visit me at the northern kibbutz where I lived with Gilad, my first love. Shira was the one who inadvertently introduced me to him. I had called the army base where she served, on a sparse hilltop by the border with Lebanon, and he answered, the new guy, fresh out of the officer's course. He was smart and funny and flirty on the phone, and after a few days, I was no longer asking for Shira. Gilad and I lived in a tiny studio apartment crammed with books, a short bike ride from the beach and steps to cornfields and swarming fish ponds. In the winter, a pecan tree bloomed outside our window, and every morning I collected the nuts into a blue bucket and we cracked the soft shells with our teeth. We rode bikes through the fields with our fluffy-eared dog galloping behind us. We woke up in the middle of the night from the sound of rain and made love. We were so in love that some days we felt sick with it, drained by the intensity of emotion, anguished and tormented when we were apart. Did everyone feel this way? They couldn't possibly. Surely our love was unique and remarkable and beyond any love anyone else had ever experienced.